Hi, everybody. This is Spooky Things, and I'm Debbie. I hope everything is going well for you. It's the start of a pretty kicking week already going on around here, but the weather is great, and so far, everything seems to be going pretty good. I have got a wonderful guest for you tonight. His name is Leon Wilkes, and I would like to introduce him now to come on. Leon, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Leon. How you been?
I've been making it. The military has caused me to move all over the place, and right now I'm here in Ohio, and I'm loving this cool rainy night.
Oh, is it raining up there right now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh. Yeah, I think those fronts are going from down here and working their way up to where you are up there.
Yep, I believe so.
Yeah, and it's nippy here, but I'm sure it's nowhere near as to what you're feeling up there.
Yes, ma'am.
I think we're only like, and I hate to even say this, but I think we're like going to be in the 40s tonight. So,
Wowzers. Wowzers. I think we're going to be in the mid-20s.
Oh, good Lord. So, Leon, I would love to hear about what you generally have done, of course. And of course we'll get into your experiences that you personally had and all, but if you could just tell our listeners exactly what it is that you do and where you have basically done that. Now you say that you're currently in the military.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That's really interesting because I've had a lot of experience with a lot of activity on Air Force bases.
Yes, ma'am.
There's a lot of trauma and there's a lot of stress
Yes.
and everything else that goes on in those areas. And being from a military family myself, I know firsthand on a lot of what goes on there.
Yes,
But
ma'am.
so tell us about yourself. We want to know.
Ha. So I've been involved in the paranormal for quite a while now, since the year 2000. So it's 2023, so about 23 years now. And my first introduction to anything that is paranormal is back in the early 90s, there was a show called Unsolved Mysteries.
Absolutely.
And I'm not that guy that had a experience that changed my life forever, but because of Unsolved Mysteries, I have I always loved the unknown stuff, right? And so that was my first introduction also to Ed and Lorraine Warren. They were on a few episodes, and just quite fascinating, right? And throughout my whole growing up, I was always fascinated with this stuff. And when it hit the year 2000, I decided, let me research this stuff. Let me learn how to investigate this stuff, right? And then let's see about how we can get people help. So what started off as something simple as getting into the paranormal, it morphed into me co-founding a team out of Georgia. And from there, the big craze back then was finding evidence, finding evidence, finding evidence, right? So we did that one day. We found unverifiable evidence of a malevolent haunting. And I was born and raised in the church. I was born and raised down south, so Southern Baptist, non-denominational, all that stuff. I was raised in the Christian faith, right? So, after we were able to show the family proof that there's a malevolent haunting, everyone in the team was so happy on our way home. Everyone was happy except for me. There's a little feeling in inside of me, telling me that, we probably could have helped these people, right? So then that's what led me down the path of studying religious demonology. I first reached out to Keith Johnson, and I me and him had many dialogues about this. But then I met up with someone by the name of Dave Considine. Have you ever heard of Dave Considine?
I have heard of him
Yeah.
yet.
He is one of only a couple people that was formerly trained in religious demonology by Ed Warren. There was only really about two of them. And so he trained me in the field of religious demonology, and that's where we're at today. I use the knowledge that was taught to me, and I help people who is going through a lot of demonic struggles, a lot of demonic oppression, diabolical attacks in general, and I bring them help to resolve their situation.
Now, when you go into a when you're going into a place, what's one of the first things that you're looking for? When you go.
Oh, when I, yeah, when I go to a place, the first thing I want to do is I talk to the client, in their home, one-on-one, face-to-face, discussion, and what I'm doing is I'm reading their body language. I am looking at how they react to certain questions. Because your body language can tell a lot, can tell if someone's lying, can tell if you need to pull more information out of them. The body language can tell everything. But while I'm talking to them, I'm extracting information. I'm just chit-chatting with them. I like to call it chit-chat. The art of the interview, that's what I have been taught with my profession, the art of the interview. And if you come into there and you lower their guard, you're coming in there as a human being, right? And you build rapport with them, you can ask certain questions in certain ways to extract information, and they don't even know that you're doing it, okay? So that's what I like to do. I am not trying to trick them, but I am trying to set the atmosphere within the home to a way to where it is calm and relaxed, and they are just wanting to talk and chit chat, right? That's what I initially like to do, that first interview. That first one-on-one interview inside the home is key.
That's really true. And it's interesting when you say that too. When you go in, my experience, when you go in there, and sometimes when you go in with this attitude of, okay, what's going on here? And what are you experiencing? And if you come in like, one of those down to business kind of a person, we're gonna, take people get alerted and
You're right.
they close off.
You're
And
absolutely right.
yeah. And but like you say, when you sit down and it's like, hey, I'm just like the neighbor down the street, you've got nothing to fear here. I just want to know a little bit about what's going on, and we'll
Yeah.
just go from there. You put a real calm, easygoing edge on it, and it's like, no worries. Just tell me what's going on. They really will open up to you better. It's
Still.
almost like that they have a self-protective mechanism going on inside of themselves that they're almost intimidated by you. And I
You're right.
always kind of wondered, right? And I always kind of wondered in my mind, is that them or is that what is pressuring them? Is that who it is? And
You're
I
right.
really, right? And
You're right.
that's why I was wondering what's one of the first things, because you don't know these people, but you do know how something would react
That's right.
to that kind of a situation. And that's what you're really going for, is you want to
You're
see that.
absolutely right.
Yeah,
Yep. I
I've
have
never.
been known to show up to the client's house and knock on the door. They open up the door and I have pizza. I say, "Hey, let's eat." And we are now relaxed. We are calm, cool, and collected. I may bring some soda with me. We're there at like friends and family, and sometimes I won't even start off talking about their issues, right? I sometimes will just start talking to them, learning about them, making jokes and all that, and then we slowly, enter into the discussion of what's happening with them when it comes to the supernatural and the paranormal phenomena.
And that's very interesting, because I completely agree. I think it's almost like you're making friends with the person and you're calling him out
Yes.
all at the same time
You're right.
in a very slow and sideways way of doing it. But it works.
Absolutely. And also, if you do it like that, you are learning how the people are, in that brief stint of time that you've been with them, how they really are, right? Now, you don't know them inside and out, but you've seen a little glimmer of the real them, right? So now, as you're talking to them, if something happens or something manifests through them that is not quite like them, you can immediately point it out. And I like to kind of write it down in my notes. This happened and this happened, just so you're aware of something trying to show itself in a how can I put this? In like a smooth way, right? In which they're not that smooth. They all have telltale signs, but the key though is meeting that person as they are, lowering the atmosphere, have a good vibe going so you can see how the people are really, and then from there you can pinpoint what really isn't them.
Exactly. That's fascinating. That is. And it's always interesting, because I as well have, studied within demonology, and everybody seems to have a different way of going about it. And I think it's fascinating that you kind of are following the same edge, I guess, that I'm
Yes, ma'am.
used to, that I'm
Yes.
used to.
Yes.
And it's a very interesting thing, because I think sometimes my experience is the more lower of an approach that you take when you need to raise the level up, you got a big overhead at that point. You got a real big
Absolutely.
overhead. And you're
Yes.
giving yourself that space that you need. I mean, if you really got to kick
Absolutely.
it up 10 notches, we've got more than enough
Yeah.
room to do that. We can
That's
do
right.
something.
I'm like, it's like this, I am a military cop and we are trained in the use of force level, right? You only meet the amount of force with what they're putting out, right? So I kind of take, I really take that approach because you have to come into a situation with a very low reactive with a low how can I put this low reactive skills, right? To try to be interpersonal. We're always taught first try to be interpersonal. It's called verbal judo, right? But you want the aggression to be lower so you can try to de-escalate the person if it needs to be like de-escalated. But come into a situation, come into a home, and your vibe needs to be really low key because just like we trained in the use of force model, you can dictate a lot by the kind of vibe you bring to it. And if you have to escalate, then escalate. But then you can also de-escalate as well. And that's how I approach it as well. I kind of remember what I've been taught as a police officer and kind of use those skills in these scenarios as well.
I never thought about that, but that there is a lot of the same skills there, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
Wow.
You are also using your investigative skills as well. You're getting to the root cause of what's really happening. Is this paranormal? Is this preternatural? Does this person need psychological counseling? Does this person need medical counseling? And all of that can be linked back to the interview. If you know how to conduct the interview, you can extract everything you need to tell you what steps you need to take next. And it's about having those interpersonal skills.
Oh gosh, you're right. And that's always a fine line that you walk
Yes, it
on
is.
when you go into a place, because when you start talking about drug abuse, alcoholism, mental issues with them or within their family, ooh, that's a hairy fine line there.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh my
Yes,
gosh.
it is.
And you really gotta have that tact to be
Yes, you
able
do.
to be able to talk to them like that and not have
Yes.
them take immediate offense and then they
Yeah,
shut down.
that's right. And it all goes back to, have you built rapport? And if you build rapport initially when you come into the home or to the situation that is happening, a good amount of the time they are going to open up to you. Why? Because now you built built rapport, and now they trust you, right? I've had some cases where it was a psychological issue. I'll give you a perfect example. I had to go up to Ringgold, Georgia. Well, let me see. It was up north Georgia, and this older lady, she called us and said, hey, her daughter, who is like 20 years old, 25 years oldish, is possibly showing some signs of possession. Usually when they first use that P word, I automatically tell myself this ain't possession, right? However, it sounded like an emergency case because there are some kids involved. Her daughter has two kids and they live with her mother, right? And so I take me and my whole team, and I have back then I had a psychologist like on my team as well. And one of the things that she specialized in was drug abuse as well. So took her with us, and when I got there, I put holy water on my hands, and I shook her hand, the mother of those two daughters. I shook her hand, and I looked at her and said, "Hi, my name is Leon Wilkes." She had no reactions. Okay. If it was a demonic case, she would have had reactions. If it was something demonic happening with her and attached to her, she would have reacted. She
Absolutely.
didn't. So I had the psychologist with me. I introduced the psychologist as just an investigator. Okay. So we're following her around the house. She's telling us some tidbits of what's been happening. We go to her room within the house, and just as soon as we go in, she tells us, "Please help me. I'm afraid I am going to hurt my children." I'm like,
Oh.
okay, duly noted, right? So within her room, all of the windows that goes outside were busted out. So I asked her, "Why are these windows busted?" And she made a point to say, "I did that to keep from hurting my children." I'm thinking, okay, I think we got something psychological going on here. But we're gonna dig further, right? So her mother was telling us that she would hold her down, and this sounds disgusting, so please forgive me, but she would take her hand, wipe it on her lady part, and smear it on her mother's face. Yes. And then her mother said that she will go and defecate under the picture of Jesus in her mother's room. Okay. So, I got a real big flag that I call a bullcrap flag, right?
Even watching too much
Per
TV.
yeah. So then I sat down, and I interviewed the lady, and there was no indications of anything that has happened to her, or anything like that that would cause something to be attached to her. So then I asked, "Have you ever had a substance abuse problems?" She immediately said no, very, very, very quickly. But then I looked at her, said, "Are you sure?" She said, "Well," she said, "well, yesterday she went to her friend's house, who's her neighbor, and she had to hit she partook in what we call methamphetamine because her nerves were shot and she had to calm down." So then she went on to tell me that she went to one of the local legends that is in her area, which I know about this local legend. So-called the local legend is that there was two gay men living in a house. They were witches, and they did some kind of satanic ritual and burnt and killed themselves and burnt down the house. And now supposedly there's a demonic force there. She told me she went there and got possessed. But the real legend, the real thing that happened at this home, is that it was back in the early 90s. Two gay men was living there, and back then in the backwoods of Georgia, that wasn't really looked on as being something good, right? Well, the people of that town back in the heyday got together, killed them, and burnt down their house. So she did not get possessed there. And so I had to tell the mom, look, and I had to tell her mom, "Here's what you need to do." She's been told me several times that she's afraid that she's gonna hurt the kids. Bruh, move the kids, keep the kids with you. She needs to go to rehab for at least 6 months. This needs to happen because I don't really touch those kind of cases unless they've been in rehab successfully for about 6 months, right? So that was one of those things where we delved into the psychological, we delved into substance abuse, and by the untrained eye, someone can go ahead and deduce that this is something that is spiritual, right? In which it wasn't. This was something that was of psychological problems and the substance abuse.
Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's interesting because in its own certain way, a lot of people that do delve into drug abuse are inviting in
You're right.
so much. And really, what it kind of sounds like just to me, okay, it sounds like a lower level
Yes.
of what they're dealing with. This is no high level thing here. Even if it was, it would have been a lower level
Yeah.
and brought on and enticed by
Yes.
the drug abuse, which of
You're
course
right.
led to,
You're
led
absolutely
to
right.
problems. Yeah, that's the way that I would have seen it myself.
Yes, ma'am.
Interesting. Whenever you've gone into a place, have you ever, this goes through my mind, okay?
Okay.
If I go into a place and somebody's hyper and they're keyed up and they're like, they're on the wild side here.
Yeah.
And you kind of walk in, you're like, good Lord, what we got going on here. And like what we were saying in the very beginning, you automatically, first thing you're going to do is we're going to tone it down. We're
That's right.
going to get it down because the way it is right now, I'm not going to get anywhere with it. So
That's
we're going to
right.
bring this down. And we want to get this at a point where we talking now.
That's right.
You're not going to threaten me. I'm not going to react to it. We're not going to
Right.
get anywhere. So we're going to bring this down. One of the first things that goes through my mind on a situation like this. Now tell me how, what your feelings are on this.
Okay.
If, and at this point, I don't know if it's lower level, if we're even dealing with this at all, but if it is a
Yeah.
lower level up to a higher level, especially if it's a higher level, which you're going to know pretty quick, I worry about jumping. And if something is threatened that bad, it's going to jump. It's going to
Yes.
move from one to another. And that's always been a concern of mine. It's like if they're going to do it, they're not long. They can't do it
Yeah.
for very long, but
Yeah,
they
yeah.
can do it. And so it's one of my fears that is I always tell everybody, keep it down, keep it on the real
Yes.
low. Because the last
Absolutely.
thing that we need is this thing to be freaking jumping. That's the last
Yeah.
thing we need. I don't want to
Yep.
deal with five people. One's enough.
That's right. Yeah.
Keep it where it is.
Yep. So from my understanding and from my working cases where these things do have a tendency to jump, like I said earlier, I walk in with a low key tone, with a low key vibe, and I try my best no matter how much it tries to dictate the tone and the atmosphere of the situation. I don't react to it. I dictate what's happening. Okay. So if it wants to challenge me just as soon as I walk in, I sit down and I look at it very, very carefully. And I would say, in the name of Jesus Christ, you're hereby commanded to shut your mouth and sit down. And guess what happens every time? They sit down and they shut their mouth. But I'm very, very low key. I don't have a raised voice. I do it just like I just did it here, very calm, collected voice. Because now, once you're going onto the situation, onto what we call the scene, right? It's your scene. And you dictate what happens. It doesn't. You don't react to it. You know what needs to happen, and you dictate the tone of the situation, right? And don't react to what it does because it wants you to react.
Oh,
It
absolutely.
wants you to break in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Okay. I've
Absolutely.
been in the middle of doing a deliverance over someone, and it manifests through that person. And this person didn't know my wife's name. This person didn't know that I was married. Okay. I don't give that information out, right? But it looked at me and said my wife's name, and it was trying to let me know I know who your wife is. It's game time, right? But I didn't crack a smile. I didn't react to it. All I said, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to shut your mouth, and that is it. And it shut his mouth, and we proceeded further with the deliverance. It's just trying to get your attention off of what's really happening.
Now, a question for you.
All right.
Being on the different installations that you are, the military installations, the bases, or
Okay.
the, because I remember my dad was in the Air Force. He's
Yes,
passed
ma'am.
away now, but he was in the Air Force, and he was on the Special Forces thing.
Yeah.
So we never knew where he was or what he was doing.
Yeah.
Most of the time, we didn't want to know,
That's right.
But we used to go to a lot of the they weren't really called bases. They were called like site
Installations.
installate, yeah,
Yep.
or radar sites or
Yeah.
installations. And I remember there being a few that there was only like maybe five or six families living on this. And
Yeah.
everybody else was like up in the barracks kind of a situation. They didn't have their families with them, but it was
Right.
a very limited amount of people that were there at
Yes, ma'am.
all. And in any case, have you ever experienced something in the heart of what these, you have the big radar, the radar sites and all
Yeah.
the equipment that's in there. Have you ever experienced something in that particular surrounding?
No, ma'am. No. I have never actually went to the radar sites. Because of what my career field is. That is fascinating, though. And now you piqued my interest. Yeah, you have piqued my interest, and now I wouldn't mind. Kind of going into those sites, and I kind of seeing if I can if I can pinpoint something.
I've been doing this since I was a kid. I mean, this is just something that I've just had with me all my life.
Yes, ma'am.
And every once in a while we would go in there with Dad. Were we supposed to be in there? Probably
Probably
not.
not.
But we were there anyway.
Yeah.
And I always thought to myself, even as a young at a young age, you really kind of wonder, is it the flow of the energy of the electricity that's being generated, because there's a lot of that. I mean, high voltage everywhere there. Is that a contributing factor, which I'm sure that it is, especially the older you get, you're like, well, yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah.
Does it generate its own energy that you're feeling that way? Or is something actually attracted to that?
Yeah.
And it becomes it's like a beaconing, pulsating machine that's just
Yeah.
bringing things to it. And I, there were sometimes I would walk in there and be like, oh man, this heavy stuff in here.
I'm like,
And
it's like the whole theory with EMF, right? Electromagnetic fields. And the theory is that it is like a battery to these entities, right? It gives them what they need, right? If you look at it in that context, within that theory, then that sounds right within those sites, right? I've had many cases where I would, this is early on, people were telling us that they're seeing apparitions, that they was telling us that they would get sick and have headaches, and a lot of what they was telling us could be contributed to something paranormal. But however, one thing we did when we did our baseline readings, we were taking an EMF detector and see how many EMFs are being pumped in, right? And some of those cases, you can contribute what they were seeing and feeling and witnessing to hypersensitivity of the EMFs. So we will, yeah. So we was able to prove that that there was nothing in the house. It was just the amount of electromagnetic fields being pumped into the house that is causing this.
Yeah, that and of course, that makes total sense. The only thing that just kind of makes me step a few steps back on that is that usually these rooms, as I'm looking back on it now, are very small. They're not huge. These rooms are not huge at all. These people would sit in front of monitors and staring at these monitors that have got a glow to them. And it's enough to do a psychological workout on you to begin with. But they're very, they're there for a reason. They're there doing a job, and their job is highly important.
You're right.
Highly, I mean, it's so secretive. And so they're on heightened alert the entire time that they're sitting there. And just the psychological aspect of it in itself, they've got these people got a lot on them just sitting there, just doing what they're doing.
Yes, they are.
It really makes you wonder between that and the equipment and the overall atmosphere of it all, that would be a beacon.
Yes, it would.
Wouldn't it? It would just be a
Most
beacon.
certainly would. Yeah, you're right.
It's like a perfect storm.
Yes, it is.
And as an adult, I wouldn't be able to experience any of that, but you could.
Yes, you're right.
Oh, I would love to hear.
Oh,
Oh, I
yeah.
would love to hear. You
Yes,
could do
ma'am.
that? Oh, would
Yeah.
you? Would please keep in touch with me and let me
I
know if
will.
you ever get that opportunity, because I am really, really lifelongly curious to
Yes, ma'am.
know, what somebody could like you could pick up there. I mean, that's
Yes, ma'am.
fascinating.
Yes,
It's just
ma'am.
something I've wondered about all my
Yeah.
life.
Yeah.
These guys in the armed services, you guys do an amazing, amazing job. And thank you very much for everything that you do. People
Thank you,
just don't
ma'am.
know what you guys go through.
Yes, ma'am.
I was born and raised in Germany.
Oh,
So,
wow.
oh yeah. And my dad's pure Native American.
Oh, wow.
And he met my mom, pure German, over there. And he got to a point where he could speak German so fluently, the Germans thought he was German, but he sure didn't look like them.
My goodness.
They were confused. They're like,
Yeah.
he talks a good game, but He doesn't really look like everybody else.
Yep.
But we liked it so much over there. My dad was like, "You guys want to stay here for a bit? I mean, I can extend this." So we didn't even
Yeah.
come over here till we were like 12 years old.
Wow.
And then even when we did come over here, we went to these little radar sites, and that were up on top of these big hills. There's the little radar site. So we were always kind of we were total military kids. It
Yeah.
was the only thing we knew.
Yeah.
And so we were really kind of sheltered. And it was just interesting to think that what we did growing up, people would be like, "They let you do that?" Well, of course they didn't let us do that.
Yeah.
Of course not. But who else was there? Who would you tell anything to? We were the only ones
That's
there.
right. You're
Nobody
right.
really cared. As long as these guys went out and did the job that they were getting paid to do, they left them alone.
That's right.
So, but I tell you the truth, I loved it. I'm so glad that I grew up that way. I'm so grateful to my mom and my dad for raising us the way that they did. I had a great childhood growing up.
Yeah.
Heck, Europe was our playground. We go on vacations to Greece and Spain and Italy, and
Wow.
you can't do that over here when you get older. But I don't know. What it did do, though, is that it raised these impressions in my mind, because you see all these cohort things going on. And as you get older, you realize that it's far from normal. That's
Yeah.
far from normal. The radar sites were one of them. But
Yeah.
when you walked in to one of those little buildings, it was there.
Yeah.
There was no doubt. It was there.
Yeah.
And even as a child, I knew it was there.
Yeah.
And it puts a lot of psychological trauma on the people
Yeah.
that are in there.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
in any case, please, if you ever get an opportunity to, let me know how that goes. I would love to
Will
hear
do.
about that.
Will do.
Another thing that, now, when I was talking to Stan, he was telling me that you are, either you are or you are going through the steps of being an Anglican priest.
Anglican priest, yes.
Anglican.
I am currently in seminary and in formation to become a priest, yes.
Now, Anglican, that, correct me if I'm not mistaken, that follows a lot of the books of Episcopalian, doesn't it?
It is older than the Episcopalian denomination. Actually, when you look at the way that we do things, we're not a part of the Church of England. We're not associated with the Episcopal Church. What happened is that in the 1970s, when the Episcopal Church was changing the Book of Common Prayer to what they have now, we had the 1928 prayer book. And so some of the bishops like broke away and maintained what we call the continuing church, meaning that we're continuing the traditional Anglicanism that was that like back in the day. So when you look at the new Anglican churches now that are sprouting up and stuff like that, you come to the how can I put this without stepping on toes? They're a little they're a whole lot more evangelical than what we are. We are traditional. When you go to one of our masses or one of our services, it looks like old Latin mass within the Catholic Church, but our mass is done in the King James English.
Oh, okay. So it's like I'm doing like a comparison of it to kind of maybe try to help people see this a little bit easier.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Jewish you have your Orthodox Jews, and then you have your non-Orthodox Jews. The Orthodox Jews being very, very strict by the book, the old ways, and the unorthodox are a little bit more laid back and easygoing about it. You know, let things slide a little bit more. Would
It's
that be
like
close?
this. Well, I know with Orthodox Judaism, they don't believe that Jesus is the Messiah, but whenever you get to Messianic Judaism, they do believe that Jesus is the Messiah. So those are the differences. But how I can paint this in a good example is when you look at the Roman Catholic Church, it had a splinter. It splintered back in the 70s whenever they went to the new Mass, the Novus Ordo Mass. Their traditional Catholics broke away, meaning that their traditional Catholics did the Mass ad Orientem. They did the Latin Mass, and they believe that the traditional way of doing things should never change. If you look at Anglicanism, we went through the similar thing. Okay. All of the traditional Anglicans broke away from the Anglican, from the new ways of doing the services and within the Episcopal Church and the Church of England, and and most of them went with the 1928 prayer book or the 1662 prayer book, and it is more of a traditional service. It's more of a traditional way of looking at your faith, stuff like that.
That's fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Now I know with me growing up, I was never, well, you know, we moved around a lot, but so we went to Catholic churches in Europe. They were mostly Roman Catholic. But then when we were over here, it was Baptist and Methodist, which we, you know, we would just, whichever one we'd go to, we'd just end up at, that's where we go.
That's
So I
right.
never really got a big religious, I didn't go to, you know, the Sunday schools or anything like that. I was pretty much left on my own to figure it out. And in a way, that's not bad. In a way, it's not. It's like you guys do whatever suits your fancy. Wherever you believe it goes, that's where it goes for you. And they were
That's right.
never, you know, they were really cool about it. They were like, you go your own path, whichever way you want to. And so, but I never got a lot of teaching as far as religion goes. So I'm, you know, whenever I hear about things like this, I'm always very fascinated by it because I know not that much about, I know what I've been taught by people as I've gotten older,
Yes,
basically, is
ma'am.
where I pick it up from. So, you know, I'm always like real keen to make sure, did I get that right? Because if I
Yes, ma'am.
didn't, you know, if I didn't get it right, I completely believe that to be true. Sure, I didn't. So, but yeah, I find that entire thing to be totally fascinating. Your whole, you as a package are very fascinating to me because you're taking things on a much more hometown level, if I can say that.
Yes,
Does that
ma'am.
make, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that. I really do. And I think that that really, somebody being able to sit there and talk to somebody, you know, instead of preaching at them,
Yes.
is going to get you farther
It most
today.
certainly is. Yeah.
Yeah, today.
I was born and raised in Georgia, and it's what we call that Southern hospitality.
It's true.
You gotta show that hospitality in order to get to know somebody, right? So
That is true.
in order to lower the guards and just what I like to call chit chat.
You can learn so much from people, and people are fascinating anyway.
Yes,
And
they are.
you look at somebody, and then when you hear about some of their life experiences, it's like, wow, I'm so glad I talked to this person. I mean, it just was a highlight of my day,
Yes,
just
ma'am.
to talk to this person.
Yep.
And but you doing what you do, both in the Air Force and out of the Air Force, is completely, totally fascinating. It absolutely is. And I commend you for both of what you're doing. Tell me, what would it be? What was one of your most interesting experiences in demonology that you sat back and you thought, here we go. I never thought that I'd be in, face to face with something, but here we go. We're at it.
Yeah. Wow. Let me think. Had a case. It entailed a former satanic high priestess, and she wanted to renounce Satanism and come to the faith of Christianity. And
Wow.
this case took about 5 years. 5 years of ministering to her, 5 years of getting her unbrainwashed from believing that she has a tangible power that the demons make her think she has, to a faith in something that she can't see. Faith and faith alone, right? It was very, very hard. Finally, she called me one day and said, "Hey, how do I know that God hears me? How do I feel like I talk to God and it's just nothing." So I said, "Honey, have you ever chit-chatted with God?" She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I don't mean like a formal prayer. Oh, dear Jesus. I mean, if you're sweeping the floor, if you're cleaning up your house, doing all your chores, have you ever just talked to God and said, 'Hey, God, how you doing today?'" "My day's not doing too good, and just what we call chit chat. That's something that God wants. It's called building that relationship with God, right?" And she practiced that for a couple weeks, and then she called me and said, "I can feel God. He is here. He is with me." I said, now you're ready to sustain a deliverance, and during that deliverance, something manifested through her, and what we call an altar. The demonic force, especially with her being in Satanism, will install like an insurance policy. And what I mean by that is it'll manifest and make you think it's her, so you'll stop what you're doing. But in reality, it fooled you, and it's still attached to her. It came forth. I spotted it immediately, and throughout the deliverance, we just kept on hammering it, right? It got to a point to where during the last part of the deliverance, she looked up at us. Well, let me rewind. There was a part of the deliverance that it did manifest to her again. Her eyes were coal black, and she was slithering like a snake. And finally, she jumped up, and me and what I call it, me and it was face to face.
Wow.
And it was trying to scare me, in which I kind of gave a little half smile, and I said, "In the name of Jesus Christ, you're commanded to sit down and shut your mouth." And it sat down. And so we kept on with the deliverance, and then it got to a point to where it was her. We then broke through. It is her. She looked up and said, "Oh, they're beautiful." I'm like, what's beautiful? She's like, the man that's standing behind you, very tall man, about 7 foot tall, very, very broad shoulders. He's the biggest one, and he's holding a sword. And then there's other ones all around him, and they have like this majestic glow to them. Then I said, do you see the demonic force? And she said, yeah, he's the coward in the corner, like right over there. So I got the name. I called it by his name. In the name of Jesus Christ, you're hereby expelled. And then just as soon as we start praying the Saint Michael prayer, she said that the biggest angel, which was Saint Michael, took him and took him away.
Oh,
And
wow.
then you immediately smelled what smelled like roses. The
Oh.
filled the whole house. That's when we knew that this thing was gone. It was an experience that I never thought that I would experience, but I was experiencing it through her eyes, and she was just amazed.
Well, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. Do you ever feel threatened by it at any time?
Yes, I did, but I don't pay it like no attention. The way I look at them is that they're like little adolescent kids. They just want attention, and they want to scare me. I don't get scared too easy.
It's interesting what's all out there,
Yeah, it is.
People don't know. People have no idea. They just don't have any idea. And I know sometimes I'll be walking down the street, not, on my way somewhere, not thinking anything, maybe shopping, just on my way somewhere. And somebody walks by me and I just get this like, whoa. And I just kind of, look at them as they go by, and it's like, I want to be as far away from you as I possibly can be.
That's right.
And you just don't know, you can't put your finger on it. It just, yeah. And then you feel kind of guilty. It's like, what's going on,
That's right.
and but then again, on the other hand, it's like, I want to get away from you as far away as I can. But then again, you think to yourself, I would like to try to help you. It's very, very, man, it's a double-edged sword. It
It is.
really can be a double-edged sword because you have to take your own self into an account as well.
Yes.
Now, that being said, I've had a lot of people tell me that they believe that I'm wrong. And you know what?
Okay.
Maybe I am. Maybe I am. I want to run this by you. This is the way I feel, I think. As a woman who has studied in and been around demonology, had my hands in certain circumstances as well, helped people out. I have this thought that, well, it's for me, it's my personal way of seeing it, is that a priest is your top dog when it comes to exorcisms, especially the high level ones. Because as a woman, I'm not saying that I'm weak, I'm not, but here's where the big but comes in at.
All right.
I'm a mother. I am a mother.
Yes.
And I believe that with me being a mother, that my emotions and my ties are so strong to my children that my fear is that that emotion can turn against me at the worst possible time.
So there within the holy orders, you have deacon, priest, and you have a bishop. And so, I'm very traditional. And so when you're dealing with the demonic realm, when it comes to the holy orders of the deacon, the deacon is can't do really much when it comes to sacramental stuff, right? He can administer the sacraments, but and he can preach, but his main priority is the ministering to the congregation, right? And assisting the priest with whatever he needs. Then you go up to a priest. The priest has a unique ability given to him by the laying on of hands by a bishop called ordination. And this priest can now do the sacraments and can do the rite of reconciliation, which is confession. He can now bless. He can consecrate bread and wine, which turns into the body and blood of Jesus Christ, right? But also he has the authority, if he's picked, if he's chosen by the bishop, the authority as an exorcist, okay? But it's got to, but he's got to be chosen by the bishop to be the exorcist of that diocese, right? So if a priest doesn't have that authority, the priest can still do in a ministerial role a minor exorcism. Why? Because it is in a ministerial role. He's ministering to the people. But now when we talk about the major form of exorcism, the what we call the solemn exorcism, that's done by either a bishop or a priest, but the priest will be given the authority to do it by the bishop. But and that priest will more than likely be designated as the diocesan exorcist and have the proper training. But you brought up something. When it comes to a female, they do think in those motherly ways, right? Sometimes it is more beneficial to have that priest, which we call father, because that person is now a little bit more of a disciplinarian, right? They don't feel in that motherly way, but they feel in a fatherly way, right? And you did bring up a good point. That is the difference. Yeah.
And it's something that you think about for a long time. And believe me, I have met some women who are strong women.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
They are phenomenal at what
Yes,
they
ma'am.
do. And I'm thinking of a couple of them right now. And to meet them, they're just as sweet can be.
That's right.
But when it comes down to business, business is business.
Business is
And
business.
they take care of business.
Yes,
And
ma'am.
I have nothing but the utmost of respect for them.
Yes, ma'am.
I have utmost of respect for anybody that,
That's right.
I've been there. I know it can be hard. But especially as being a woman to be in there, they kick ass pretty darn good.
Yes, ma'am.
They really do. And but I have often thought, and I think maybe that's because as me, of course, being a woman and being a mother, I myself am pretty good at locating, being able to, it's something I've done all my life.
That's right.
I can put my finger on it.
That's right.
Me being at the front line, I think I'll pass on
You know
that.
what? Another thing that comes into play is piety. You know, and Father Gabriel Amorth, God rest his soul. He was a chief exorcist at the Vatican. And he once wrote that there was times when an exorcist couldn't break through and bring resolution to the person being afflicted, you know, the possessed person. But guess what they did? They took the person to Mother Teresa, and through her piety and through her prayers was able to eradicate the demonic force. So it comes also to piety, you know, and Father Gabriel Amorth understood that sometimes you need to take the person to Mother Teresa and let her pray for that person, because she can get through, and she can help deliver the person.
Well, yeah, but she had a private custom line straight up there.
Oh, yes.
She
Yes,
did.
ma'am. Yep.
Yeah. The world will be blessed if we ever get anybody like Mother Teresa again.
That's
I
right.
mean,
That's right.
she was about as blessed as a person's ever going to be on this earth in
You're right.
our lifetimes. And oh man, she was absolutely amazing.
You're right.
And anybody who would study under her or be given the faith, the pure raw faith that she had, and she lived by with every breath she took,
Yep.
what an amazing experience that must
That's
have
right.
been. You
That's
know,
right.
just being standing next to her would have been an amazing thing.
You're absolutely
I'm
right.
sure you just feel it just standing in her presence. You could feel the holiness coming from her. It would just amaze me.
Yep.
But do you ever get a chance to go on any investigations as far as doing, you know, being in the military? I'm sure you got to go to all kinds of different places. You guys don't settle in for very long, I know.
No,
You
we don't
got
sell
to.
them for very long. I make a point not to go on investigations anymore. When someone calls me in, it's basically the what I like to say the cleanup crew, right? They've already done the investigation. They have already showed me the evidence, you know, and now it's time to come in and take care of business. So, I haven't had to do a full-fledged investigation in many years, but if I had to, I could do it right now.
Yeah, it's something that's kind of hard to get out of your blood, you know. It's just like, God, I really want to go in there and see what's going on.
Yep, you're right.
I'm aching to get in there to see what's going on in there.
That's
There's
right.
a, oh, there's like I live down in Mariana, which is this little quaint little town up in North Florida. I live about maybe,
Ah,
yeah.
I know
I'm.
exactly where that's at. I used
Do
to
you
drive through
know?
there all the time, going to time I'm going to Panama City.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you'd
Yes,
have to go
ma'am.
right through us. Yeah, because on 231,
Yep,
take you
yep.
right down there. Yeah. There's all these little towns around here, and there's this one building in a place called Cottondale. And
Okay.
There's this one little building, and every time I drive by that building, I'm like, man, I know that there's something going on in there because it's just oozing from the windows.
Yes, ma'am.
And one day I was driving, I do medical transport for people. I work for a medical transport company, and I was driving by one day, and this lady was looking at me. She goes, "What do you see in there?" And I just kind of looked at her and I smiled and I said, "Nothing good." Nothing at all. But I can't help but want to go in there so bad.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. And it's just, the things that we think of is so different than from what other people think, and
Yeah.
it's just it's funny because it's something that sets us apart,
Yeah.
And when you, it's like, tell me that you do this without telling me that you do this kind of a thing.
Yeah,
But well, you have been an absolute joy to talk to. I have really enjoyed you being,
thank you for
with us
having
on
me.
this
Thank you for
show.
having me. And I'm so sorry that it took us, what, almost 16 minutes past to even get on. So I'm more than happy to come on anytime you want.
I'd love
And
that.
know what? Just let me know when I'm on, and we can talk about anything.
Oh, I would love that. If you come up with something, and I'm going to sit around and I'm going to think of something to challenge you
Yeah.
with too.
Yeah.
And I love the way that you think, and
Yes,
I just
ma'am.
like I very much. It's a very comfortable way that
Yeah.
I feel like I am quite used to,
Yeah.
and I never knew that I was. You know what
Yeah.
I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
And so I can really relate to so much of what you're saying, and it's very refreshing. It really
Yes,
and
ma'am.
truly is.
Yes, ma'am.
So, well, I have totally enjoyed this conversation. We can go on
Me
all
too.
night long if it had been up to me.
Yes,
But
ma'am.
thank you so much for coming on. And if it's okay with you, I'd love to have you back.
Yes,
Love, love,
ma'am.
love to have you back.
Absolutely. Just name when and I'm there.
Sounds great. Well, Leon, thank you again and keep up the good work.
Yes,
And
ma'am.
thank you for all that you do for everybody. Thank you
Yes,
so
ma'am.
much.
Yes, ma'am. And God bless you. And
And to you.
if I don't get to talk to you before Christmas, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
And the same to you.
Yeah, just let me know when, and I am game for coming back on and talking about whatever.
Sounds great. Thank you, Leon.
Yes,
Everybody,
ma'am.
this was Leon Wilkes, and he's a demonologist as well as being in the services. And what a fantastic, fantastic evening that we've had with him. And I hope that you guys have enjoyed it as much as I have. And I want to wish everybody very, very careful driving around out there. And so you can have a very happy and joyous Christmas without any problems. Because I'm telling you, I've been driving around out there and people are rearing up.
That's
They're getting
right.
nuts, aren't they, though?
Yep.
Oh my God. You guys got snow up there now, don't you?
It's just rain for right now. I think the snow is coming probably next week.
Lowered. So you're gonna have all them crazy people out there driving in, and it's gonna be in the snow. Oh my
That's
gosh.
right.
Just gets crazier. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Leon.
Yes, ma'am.
And everybody out there, we want to wish you a good night, and spooky things will come back to you again next Tuesday at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time. Thank you and God bless to everybody. Good
God bless
night.
you.
God bless you too. Good night.